Welcome to Association Chat. This is your online home for the association community where we warm ourselves by the virtual fire. Can you feel the chill in the air? We warm ourselves with the virtual fire with topics of the day, welcoming thought leaders and trailblazers alike to join up in this online home for the community. I'm the host of Association Chat, Kiki Letalian. And before we get started, I want to say thank you. Thank you to the Patreon supporters of Association Chat. It takes many hours and blood and sweat and tears, mostly just, I don't know as much sweat and tears, what that ratio is, but it's a lot of technology and lots of love that goes into this. And it's the Association Chat Patreon patrons that make it possible. So if you feel like showing your support for Association Chat, and this work means as much to you as it does to me, then please visit the Patreon page. I'll throw that Patreon page address up at the bottom of the screen a little bit later. Our focus for today is to take a look at where things stand with the association industry in the face of unrelenting COVID-19, the complex nature of associations, and the role that association advocacy professionals are playing in such a year as this one. It's incredible. We are looking at a time when advocacy has probably never mattered more than it does now. I'll start with a quote from the acting ASAE president and CEO, Susan Robertson. The challenges of COVID-19 impacting every part of our daily lives, along with trying to understand how the association industry can affect changes in the fight against social injustice, are complicated to assess, yet critical to act on. Now more than ever, we must come together as a community to learn from each other, have those hard conversations, and define the work that needs to be done as we move into the next century. And that is why today I have our featured guests coming to the show to talk with us today, because we are talking with Mary Kate Cunningham. She's the Senior VP of Public Policy, and Chris Vest, Director of Public Policy for the American Society of Association Executives, ASAE. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with the first question, which is, look, when 2020 started for all of us, it started and we did not, unless we were completely psychic and knew what was going to happen. And I haven't met anyone yet who did. 2020 is not gone exactly how we expected. So I wanted to ask each of you, you know, what has happened between what you were expecting to do at the beginning of 2020 and today? Because I'm guessing there have been some shifts. I'll start with you, Mary Kate.
So I thought this was going to be a quiet year to work on building our capacity for advocacy, and then we would have to struggle to get in the news. So I was definitely wrong. And while it's been it's really disastrous for so much of the economy, The one positive is we've been able to tell our story, and elected officials have gotten an education on what associations are and the incredible value that they play.
Yeah. How about for you, Chris?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. Even though we're heading into the eighth month of this pandemic, and in many ways it just feels like it's gone by so fast, and I don't know how I can possibly say that, but I really just mean from a work perspective. I don't know about you, Mary Kate, but the monotony of quarantine and lockdown orders that I hear from so many of my friends, I didn't really feel that at all when it came to the job this year. We just have hit the ground running on COVID-19 relief efforts in March at the same time that everyone's adjusting to working from home and communicating in a different way with each other. And we've just been hustling ever since. It's, you know, even though Congress has been deadlocked on a new relief package for months now, every day there are new kernels of intel that could impact what we're trying to accomplish. So it's been a lot. And a big change for me recently is taking on more of a strategic communication role for ASAE in general as well. So not just public policy, but trying to be very mindful about how we're communicating out what we're doing as an organization, working with different departments, and trying to build a really consistent voice throughout the organization.
I have to say that I feel like, as someone who has worked as staff for associations and then now, you know, has for many years worked on the side supplying services to associations, I can imagine that one of the things about working for an association that brings so much, I don't know, a feeling of this is why I do what I do, a feeling of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the word, it's escaping me, but is that sense that it has meaning, right? That you have meaning in the work that you do. And we were talking a little bit before we got started that, you know, in the past, I've always thought of advocacy as something that is one of the most important roles that an association can play, but that it's often the unsung hero. It's often either, if not ignored, it's people don't pay as much attention to it as they should. And until a crisis happens, and now there's something that's happening this whole year, there's been something that's been happening that is impacting all of us. So how does that feel to be a part, to be playing such an important part, you know, especially at ASAE, where, you know, it's the Association of Associations, the work that you're doing is impacting so many people and so many different ways. How does that feel?
I think it's when we did different calls for stories for how associations are being impacted to tell those to the Hill, it was really incredible to see, but also heartbreaking because these groups are providing huge positive force in society from in the economy and workforce training. And they're really, so many of them are struggling to keep their doors open. Mm-hmm. So being able to have that message be understood more in Congress and then being excluded from the Paycheck Protection Program in the beginning and then doing all of this work to tell our story, to be included in the different drafts. We still need to get over the finish line there, but having associations, C6 associations included in the last four or five legislative bills has been a positive development. And just sometimes joining some of these Zoom congressional roundtables or caucus meetings, if we bring up the plight of associations and the Paycheck Protection Program, they all start nodding and saying, you know, we hear from associations all the time. We know, we understand this issue now. So that's been some great progress there, but absolutely agreed. Advocacy, something that you can't develop on the fly when you need it. It's something that you have to have offensively. And especially at the beginning of the pandemic, this was not a time to make new friends on the Hill. You really had to have existing relationships of people that understood your community.
I imagine they were pretty busy, right? It's hard to forge those new relationships when there's a little bit going on.
I saw a poll of Hill staffers and they said, who's the most annoying lobbyist that you deal with? And they said, anyone who approached me in March or April, not about COVID.
Well, I mean, what do you have to say about this, Chris? Because I know that, I know that a lot of times in advocacy, it does seem like people are they not listening? Do you feel like people are listening more? Are they paying more attention?
I think they are. And I think associations are getting better at telling their stories because, you know, just out of sheer urgency. Because, you know, the community, and I think we feel a bit of urgency, a bit more urgency to our work this year, just because we know our community is struggling so much and you want to get them access to some of the relief programs like the PPP that we know could help them. I think we just know that there's a lot riding on this for our members. But we need help in telling the story. And I think our members get that, and they have been better at learning how to communicate what it is that they do in a way that people can understand it and appreciate it.
You know, you mentioned something, Mary Kate, about the meetings that are held by Zoom, and it brought to mind that that's probably a challenge that's kind of unique to this year, where maybe, you know, a lot of these meetings were happening in a different way. How has COVID-19 and the challenges of this particular year, how has this brought unique challenges to the work that you do?
So it's definitely brought a lot of challenges. You can't, you know, lobbyists like to physically be on the Hill or at receptions, and that's where you hear the intel, especially after people have had a few glasses of wine, you can get better intel. So we can't do that now, and that's very frustrating. But I would say there are a lot of positives in that we can get a lot more of our members to Congress virtually for these meetings, not just through the in-person fly-in. So we were able to have a small Zoom roundtable of Kentucky associations with the chief of staff for Senator McConnell. And that would be really hard to logistically make happen otherwise. So, and I've heard that from some of our CEO members as well. It's Susan Neely talked about on our podcast about how normally getting a bunch of CEOs of insurance companies together with a senator would take so much back and forth. And it's just a lot easier to make it happen virtually. So I do think some of this, the positives we'll be able to keep for future advocacy.
See, and that's so great to hear, because the silver lining is that we've discovered new ways to do things that might mean that we're able to connect and communicate better in the future than what we did before, which, you know, isn't it nice to have some silver linings? So far, by the way, I want to give both of you just a little update of taking a temperature check of the room. Glenn Tecker says, change continues at all levels. Kiki rearranged her room again. Why, thank you for noticing. Chris has a good looking beard. Mary Kate has new eyeglasses.
I did not get new glasses. Glenn Tecker, good eye.
He is very observant. And then I just want you to know that over here on Twitter, Tommy Goodwin says, key takeaway so far that Chris's beard is better than my beard. So good to know. We have beard game on point. So,
and Tommy Goodwin is such a good association lobbyist. He's really carried so much of the water on expansion to Paycheck Protection Program.
Yes. So Tommy, did you hear that? I hope, you know, tweet if you heard it. But yes, we appreciate the comment out there. So, okay, you've mentioned a couple of things that, you know, ASAE has been fighting for, but I really would like to go over some of the big key issues that you're really out there hoping that people know more about. Because if anyone in this audience hasn't been reading the great material that's coming out, the great emails that come out, you're not following the advocacy alerts, then please tell us, Mary Kate, Christopher, what are the big advocacy issues ASAE is working on right now for the association industry?
Chris, do you want to start with COVID?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, COVID relief tops the list for us right now. We feel like we're very close. It's been a months-long sustained educational effort, but this is one of the least partisan issues on the table right now, the expansion and strengthening of the PPP. There's a lot of bipartisan support for this. We just need to see some of these other pieces fall into place, like state and local government funding and whatever they're going to do with liability protections for businesses and schools. Some of the key, like, sort of roadblocks that are remaining to this next relief bill. The Senate has adjourned until November 9th. So logistically, it's difficult to pass a stimulus before the election. The House comes back on November 16th. So when they come back, they'll have a December 11th deadline to reach agreement on another funding bill to keep the government open. So there's a possible window there if they can resolve some of these differences. But otherwise, we're pushing into next year. And then, I would say related issue in terms of having to do somewhat with COVID is the Pandemic Risk Insurance Act that we have been pushing for a while. And that's something we feel can really benefit associations by helping to protect them from business interruption losses resulting from future public health emergencies like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff Evans from our team has been doing a great job on so much of this lobbying and on the Pandemic Risk Insurance Act. This is modeled after the Terrorism Risk Insurance Program that was passed after 9/11. And that also took a long time to bring all the stakeholders together. You know, it's hard to especially create a new program like this, but Congressman Carolyn Maloney from New York has been championing this. And Susan Robertson, our CEO, spoke at a congressional roundtable on this issue, trying to bring together a lot of stakeholders. So we've been having a lot of meetings and are pushing forward on that issue. And on the positive side, which is not something we're used to talking about, but there is some chance that we can get some positive action on expanding access to association certification. There's possible legislation to give people, to open up 529 savings accounts for certification. And that's being championed by Congressman Abigail Spanberger and Rob Whitman from Virginia. And what's great about this is it's bipartisan. And we know that association certification serves all types of professions and industries, from blue collar to other professions. So it's a really great opportunity for people that are not taking the traditional college path in many ways. And I think that's what makes a lot of members of Congress really want to increase access to certification. There's also, Congress has talked about a potential ways in a COVID relief package to also give people pre-tax options or a $4,000 credit to get more access. So overall, we want to keep educating Congress about what association certification is. And it also plays into the positive narrative about what our community is doing to help every state.
Yeah, I think having Congress have a better understanding of the role that associations play in workforce development is a really important thing that we can focus on right now. So those are some good issues for us.
Absolutely. And especially because we know there are going to be future fights and Congress will be looking for revenue. And we are always concerned that they could go and try to increase the unrelated business income statute and increase taxation. So anything we can do to keep, pardon me, educating about what we do, the positive, the role we play is really important going forward.
All right. And we have a comment. This is great. Is ASA curating this improved storytelling on the part of associations so we can share with governments beyond the Hill? Thank you, James Latham. Any comments to that?
Well, we do have a nice part of the Power of A website where there are a lot of stories that have been curated there that people can see and sort of maybe relate to their own organization in terms of what they're doing to benefit society.
One other thought is if you are interested in writing an op-ed, our team has worked with different members to try to get those placed in different state newspapers. So that's something too. It also helps push our message forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's so good to hear because everyone's always wanting to know, you know, when they hear something like this, how can I get involved? How can I do more? Chris, you were about to say something else, I think.
Well, I think, we're doing a better job of telling our story, but I think we always need help from associations we put together a document called the Essential Pillars and Purpose of Associations that we have been sharing with congressional offices, just to have them understand the breadth of activity that associations are engaged in. The more people can kind of use some of the resources that we've created or add to them, the better off we'll be as a collective community.
I love.
Absolutely. One of our board members said this, I'm going to send this to my family when they ask what associations do. So we try to make it short enough, but we can share that.
We all get that question, right?
Yeah.
And that's our challenge is how can we educate enough where people stop asking that?
All right. And so if you are following along live, Mary Kate just shared this with me and I will share it with you. The link to the Essential Pillars and Purpose of Associations PDF for your Thanksgiving conversations, Halloween conversations about what do associations do. This is actually helpful for all of us who work with associations because it is something that comes up. I was just in this position not that long, it was last week. And someone said, when you say you work with associations, what do you mean? Like homeowners associations? And I just, you know, I don't know why that question still throws me off, but it does at first. I'm like, you know, associations. So this is fantastic. Thank you so much. Glenn says, certification initiative is a nice parry to the Koch brothers funded alliance trying at the state level to impede credentials being awarded by associations.
Yes, we had created a coalition with the Institute for Credentialing Excellence called the Professional Certification Coalition to work on these issues. And that's been a lot of education at the state level. I'm sure some folks remember it started with legislation in Louisiana that would remove your ability to call yourself out as having a certification, which also is unconstitutional. But we still had to fight that legislation. And the coalition's still working really hard to preserve private certification and whether through government relations at the state level or sometimes lawsuits.
Mm. Oh my gosh.
As we feared that you know, Louisiana was kind of a catalyst for starting some of those same sort of state-based legislative efforts on credentialing across the country. So.
Yeah, our friends at Pillsbury do a lot of the legal work for that coalition, and they've been really terrific.
So if you had to give us sort of catch us up on wins and losses over the year, could you give us a summary of, okay, these are where we have advanced on the field, and this is maybe where we didn't do what we wanted to do?
Well, one big win in December was repealing the unrelated business income tax on transportation costs, the 21% tax for nonprofits. And that was, it seems like a world ago, but we do have members that always remind us how much they saved on their taxes. It would have been the first time that UBIT was applied to an expense. So we don't want to do anything to further that expansion. So that was a huge coalition of associations and religious groups actually kind of took all, they say the stranger the coalition, the stronger the advocacy. So it was able to get us over the finish line. And then in this year, I think associations being removed from a draft from the Paycheck Protection Program was the biggest challenge. And then our efforts since then have just been to really fight back to educate and to get people to understand the value of associations and why they're so critical and why they need the same help that private companies have right now. We're tax exempt for a reason. We have a exempt mission, and to be treated as second class citizens compared with private companies is really a shame.
Why do you think that? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to add, I think even though we're not across the finish line on COVID relief, the fact that you do see bipartisan support for 501c6 inclusion eligibility for the Paycheck Protection Program now, when before there was all this concern about C6s or just lobbying groups and, you know, we really don't want to support that they're getting access to federal relief. You know, I think those concerns, maybe they haven't fully gone away, but they have been mitigated to an extent that there's widespread support for 501c6 access to these programs now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, this kind of goes back to your essential pillars document, where I just feel like so much education has to happen all the time about what associations are, and that 501c6, 501c3, there are different types, they mean different things, but to better understand the environment that we're in and you know, what we're fighting for, you have to do some educating in that case. And associations can be kind of complex in that way. You know, you're not just fighting for one particular thing all the time. You're fighting for a combination of different types of organizations. So with that, you know, what are some of the, I guess, biggest challenges that you see? I know that you're both connected into the government relations and advocacy communities. What are some of the biggest challenges that you see with that role of association advocacy professionals in general in relation to this year of fighting, you know, the global health pandemic? There's societal changes like Black Lives Matter. We're looking at economic uncertainty. So, you know, people in your field are very busy, no matter what they do. The question is this, sorry, I'll go back. The question is this, what do you see happening, or what are some of the challenges or opportunities, I guess, facing professionals like yourselves that are in this line of business?
I think associations have been leading, like, they, on some of the social change issues, like they have on every other part of society. So it's been really wonderful to see from the ASAE and the Association Forum and all the other groups that have done listening sessions over the summer and talked about Black Lives Matter. And I've been loving the text to table conversation that Michelle Yes. Clement, Irving Washington, and all those folks that has brought, has been so many interesting conversations. You can watch it all on YouTube. Really great conversations with four Black association CEOs talking about their experiences. But I think that associations are getting a little bolder in what they're willing to take on, and it's a reflection of what their members are asking them to do.
Yes, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this year has shown us, you know, from COVID to Black Lives Matter and other issues that we've seen this year, is that, you know, associations are interwoven into societal issues, and we can be drivers on these issues that resonate throughout the business community and society at large. You know, associations are a good sort of collective entity where people can talk about, you know, what change looks like and what sort of decisions need to be made to allow substantive change to occur. You know, associations are just kind of like natural places where those kinds of conversations can really percolate.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Mary Kate.
I just want to add on to Glenn Tecker's comment about preventing the purchase of the .org registry. Around a year ago, Chris and I were at our board meeting in Omaha, and we thought that was going to be the biggest issue for us, the possible sale of the .org registry to a private equity firm and how they could raise the prices, which would impact associations and also small nonprofits around the world. So great point by Glenn.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks, that was a huge win.
Yeah. I know that, you know, I have to say that was one that really hit close to home, because that was one that, I mean, it should for all of us, right? But for Association Chat in particular, I was really pushing that, like really trying to get people to pay attention. And I think part of, boy, talk about making a complex issue more complex. Understanding domains and how they work and all of this stuff, had to go pretty deep on that one. And I'm still not sure that people even know that it happened, that we got very close to something like being a serious problem that almost went through. But yes, here we are on the other side of it.
Could have been very costly. Yeah.
It could have been very costly. We'll just, I mean, that's one of those things that we'll just never know, but you know, crisis averted, I suppose. So yeah, you know, when you're looking at moving forward, I know that obviously you've been very busy all this year, but with something like COVID-19, that is this ongoing developing issue where, you know, you're continuing to fight for relief, and yet there's, where's the end? You know, where's the end of this pandemic? What's going to happen with the election? What's going to happen in the upcoming year with the economy? How's that going to impact the industry? In your roles, and this is kind of a difficult question to answer, I know, but in your roles, when you see some of this, that's this ongoing struggle with no clear end in sight, how are you sort of, I don't know what the word, how are you formulating plans as you go forward for what happens next?
I think we know that there'll be a ton of education needed. On the Hill, there's always turnover in staff. And so that's an entirely new person you have to introduce to associations. We could have a change in the executive branch, and that would be a huge turnover, a number of jobs and folks to work with. I think one thing we're thinking about is we really, in 2009, when President Obama didn't allow registered lobbyists to work for his administration, that actually helped kind of create the Power Bay. We think association lobbyists are kind of critical to every profession and industry, and they are the institutional memory, and it's really important to have them if they want to go to government. They're kind of the stewards of those industries and professions. So that's something that's kind of on my mind if we do have a change in administration. But I think we know we'll have a lot of fights ahead. So getting more people involved, ASA has 50,000 members. We want to get as many people involved in advocacy as possible, because we know we're going to need those people for the fights ahead.
What do you need us to do? Mary Kate, Chris, what can we do? What can Association Chat do? What can I do to help you? I am so serious. You know that, you know, I was going to participate in the fly-in this year. That was kind of, you know, switched around the way that was going to go down. But what can we do?
So we are planning the fly-in again this year. It might be virtual. The whole thing might be. It's unclear if Congress is going to let any of us in person to the Hill, but we'll have a big call for volunteers for that. If it's virtual, we'd love to have as many people as possible. And we'll have more calls for volunteers, but definitely if you are not subscribed to En-ROADS, it's free for anyone, but that's a good way to just, it's a Thursday policy newsletter to get the top most important issues, and we'll have any kind of calls to action in En-ROADS as well.
Right, and I'm going to just put up here at the bottom of the page, thepowerofa.org, coronavirus advocacy, and you sent this to me a little bit earlier, Mary Kate. This is the overall advocacy home. So if people want to go visit and check out and see what's happening there, you can run over there. I'll keep that at the bottom.
Yeah, we keep it with our latest, the pillars and a lot of other documents are there. We've sent a lot of sign-on letters to the Hill this year, which is helpful because we can break it down by state and the congressional office can just easily see who is their constituents. But we've had about, I think, 10,000 signatories over the last couple of letters. So the more we can show the numbers to Congress, the better.
All right. This is kind of a strange question too. It relates to something we talked about a little bit earlier that had to do with, you know, the struggle of, you know, the complex issues with 501c6s, you know, having and 501c3s, and, you know, advocating for an industry where some of the organizations that are part of that industry are not all the same. You know, how do you grapple with the challenges that come from some of the negative press, you know, around aid for like large trade associations or things like that, because when they're all part of the community, I imagine that can become, you know, difficult to sort of communicate about, and not everyone's going to take time to read the essential pillars, you know. I'm throwing that out. I'm just throwing that out in general. Like, how do you handle that?
Yeah. So I think one way is data. The ASA Research Foundation has done touch point kind of really quick polls. They've been incredible for almost an arm of the advocacy department over the last year, just because we knew the best way to influence Congress is by actual numbers. So just showing the breakdown to elected officials and their staff about how small so many associations are, so many of them that do a small amount of lobbying, or they're a small organization. So the way that they might try to calculate it in this current Paycheck Protection Program might unnecessarily take in a lot of folks. I think the more we can talk about, our old boss, Jim Clark, used to say that people on the Hill don't know what associations are until they're looking for a job. And so I think that's true. So many of them know the couple associations that they work with, but they don't know what value we provide in terms of setting industry standards and really helping the economy, all the actual tasks that associations do, bringing together and supporting the community. So the more we can kind of tell those stories, I think introducing them to the actual association constituents, and they see the variety in person, I think is really helpful, so that they don't think it's all just the mega kind of one or two.
Right.
Yeah, I think you know, even the groups that some lawmakers might be talking about as large trade associations that do a lot of lobbying, they're engaged in a lot of other things, but it's beyond just lobbying. And, you know, these are activities that benefit the businesses that they represent and the economy, workforce development, all of these issues that Congress cares a lot about. So, and, you know, by the way, you know, there are massive industries that have been receiving COVID relief funds directly from, as a result of congressional action. So, you know, just because there's a large association out there, and by the way, those industries also lobby too. Mm-hmm. So
exactly,
you know, we want Congress to understand the full breadth of activity that associations are involved in, and not apologize for lobbying because that's an important function that we fulfill.
Right. Well, I can't imagine if you didn't, you know. So,
yeah, there's interesting data about how people are critical of lobbyists, except for the group that represents their interests.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
And if you think even, you know, the teachers, nurses, every group has a advocacy professional making their case and telling their story.
So, and this isn't a question that I planned on asking, but, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of discussion, I'd say. And when I say there's a lot of discussion, of course, you know, over the years, hearing different people at networking receptions and, you know, through association chat and different conversations, there's a lot of discussion about where the association industry is headed and what changes might come of it. And, you know, during a time like 2020, it seems like all bets are off. Like a lot of the established rules, a lot of the expectations around how institutions function, how industries function are just kind of up in the air. And so realizing that you're not psychic, you're not fortune tellers, if you had to peer into a crystal ball and say, you know, in 5 years, this is what's going to happen to the association industry. And I know I didn't give you any heads up on this, but just put on your fortune teller's hat, look into, peer into the crystal ball and tell me what you see.
Sure. My guess would be that, well, I'll take a step back. And we know that these times of crisis are also times of real innovation. Mm-hmm. And if an association might have been a little sleepy, that this has really shaken them out of it. And they know exactly what they need to provide to their members. And we've heard CEOs say their members are saying, we need the association more than ever. Mm. I guess the question is, how do you fulfill those needs in ways that keep your lights on for your association?
Yeah.
So I do think, that there'll be, we're seeing the real, I think we can do so much education online, but then also I think there will be still face-to-face, but I think it'll be really smaller, but maybe really critical. There's that one meeting you have to go to for the association of the year and you need to be in the room. And I just went to my first face-to-face event since March, the Spirit Event Vernon was outdoors. And it just reminded me, oh my God, you get so much more done when you're actually talking to someone. There's nothing that can replace that. So I think associations will just keep, we'll have to keep innovating, but we're going to survive like we have through every other time that they have said associations are over.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Associations are over. They are not, especially like we need our associations now, right?
Exactly. We can always innovate and survive.
Chris, yeah,
I think this pandemic has taught associations how to be more nimble and quick to adapt, which was not always, you know, I think that we had a rap as an industry that maybe we were a little slow moving or slow to change in the past, but you know, out of sheer necessity, I think we're being very adaptive as a community. You know, when you look at the way that education is taking place and the way that associations are still meeting the needs of their members, that's all very adaptive. And you know, I think it will serve us well as an industry moving forward because, you know, we will be more thinking about contingency planning and you know, trying to forecast a little better and just being able to get things done a little quicker than perhaps we have in the past.
Yeah, you know, I think the argument for why should we have this, you know, reserves, you know, that, I mean, we've established that now. And it is true that even while associations have had this reputation for being risk averse and slow to move, and I've heard it all, like, you know, how it's like trying to turn a tanker around, you know, and all kinds of stuff. But the thing is, look, we had to change really fast. All these associations had to change extremely quickly, at least with the workforce and how they were getting business done, what was happening with meetings. And I have been absolutely impressed by the fact that, you know, conversations I had 5 years ago with executive directors who swore to me that they could never make a remote workforce ever work, right? These are the same ones who are wondering if they actually have to have a headquarters to go back to now because they're seeing that it can be effective and they made it happen. It has been amazing to watch.
Has been.
Yeah.
Agreed. It's a time of a lot of innovation, and I'm genuinely excited to see what associations do to keep thriving.
So our friend Glenn says, good news. Our research and experience demonstrates that associations have been innovating at the same rate and scale as for-profit companies of the same size. Yes.
I love that, Glenn.
Yeah, I know. It's good stuff. So, okay. So, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, as we've been going through and sort of looking back and reminiscing about how 2020 is not the year that people are going to reminisce about, I don't think, but and we've also looked ahead and we've looked into what the future holds. I have to tell you that every single week I have been asking the guests on Association Chat to answer the question of the week. So warning to those of you who are listening to this for pure advocacy information, association advocacy information, this is all about the question of the week, which is not about that. And that is, what is your morning routine? So I'll start, Chris, I'll start with you since since you're smiling so broadly and your beard has obviously won the beard award on Twitter today. So
the first thing I have to do as soon as I get up is feed all the animals that are in my house currently because it's a necessity for first thing off the bat. But after that, if it's a good day, I will try to take a Peloton ride, a bike ride, and just try to get the juices going a little bit before I get into the meat of the day. Of course, like, you know, I have to digest all the news that happened over the night, you know, just trying to catch up on everything. But yeah, that's, you know, these days of being sort of shut into our homes as we have been, I don't venture too far from the four walls of this house. So
yeah, but you recently moved, right? So at least the walls are a little bit different than they have been. So previous in the but you did it in March, right? So
a little bigger and a little more space. So that's been good.
All right. And so Mary Kay, what about your morning routine?
So I'm not getting on the Peloton, and now I feel like I need
say, I've been shamed, Peloton shamed.
I do love Peloton, and my name is Peloton Lobbyist on Peloton. So, but my morning is Nespresso and the Playbook podcast. The Playbook podcast is so good. Anna Palmer and I think Jake Sherman read it themselves, and Lord knows how early they are up because we've had Anna speak at like 7:30 a.m. and she had already done the podcast. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I guess we had her. She arrived at 7:30. So that's a really good one just for when you're half awake but want to hear the latest madness from Congress.
Oh, I love it. Okay. And so the last question, and that's because this is a very special time, depending on when you're listening to this, folks, or watching it. Right now, we are recording this and it is October 27th. We have a special thing that's coming up very soon, and that is Election Day. So where are you going to spend Election Day? What are you going to be doing for your election night? Talk to us about your plans. I talked to someone earlier today. I was telling Mary Kate before we started. I talked to someone earlier today, and she is taking off for the Shenandoahs and will not even be online, reachable, and is just ignoring the whole thing. And I told Mary Kate, I can't imagine doing that. I wish I could, but so what are your plans for election night?
I'm going to watch the returns come in at home. My husband used to be a pollster, so he still does opinion research. So I'm looking forward to his analysis. And then also we'll have copious amounts of bourbon. Matt's my Kellyanne Conway, so I can give him, he can give me the latest.
I love it.
Yeah, I'll be watching from home as well. I can't stay away. It's just I have to know what's going on at all times. But yeah, there'll definitely be wine involved.
Definitely. All right. There will be
some imbibing. Your wife, her services might be needed as well in her profession.
What's that?
Chris's wife's a psychologist, so we might need all the professions available.
All of them together, yes. Yeah. Well, you know, and in the association space, any of you who have resources or help that can help us get through election night. Yeah, I don't know.
Her services have helped me immensely at home here during this year.
Well, and
no shortage of the wait list for her.
I know. And P.S., it'll probably be election week, so let's fire a month. So we might have a long go of it. We'll see what happens, I suppose. So with all of that, how can people reach you? You know, I put your Twitter handles up earlier. I'll put them up one more time. If people want to reach Mary Kate and Chris by Twitter, you can just reach out to them through their Twitter handles that are at the bottom of the screen and also in the show notes later, if you're listening to this later. But how can they also reach out to you if they're not on Twitter and if they want to just connect with you personally, talk with you about your beard or talk about your bourbon selection?
I think the email address that hits our whole team immediately is publicpolicy@asaecenter.org. And that's our rapid response line, but we're always happy. Our job is to talk to people about all these issues. So we're always happy.
Any way you want to reach us is good for us.
Excellent.
Facebook, well, you know.
All of it. You're there. Yeah. Well, is there anything else I didn't ask you? Anything else that you'd want to cover today for the Association Chat community? Because I have to tell you, I'm so thankful that you came on. The news, you know, Mary Kate had some great news that she's now senior VP of public policy, right? That's right.
We have a great team, and congratulations to Chris for his promotion.
But. Oh, Chris, I didn't realize. Okay, and promotion to Chris too. Is it director or did I get that wrong? Oh my gosh.
No, you got it right. Now he's VP, Vice President, Corporate Communications and PR.
Ah, congratulations. Yeah. I love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, all right.
We do have a great team.
Well, okay. So everyone, if you want to find out more, if you want to get involved, which would be great, if you want to reach out and just find out a little bit more about Mary Kate and Chris and wish them congratulations on their recent promotions, then please do so. Mary Kate, Chris, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. I really want to thank our association professionals because it's hard to ask people to advocate with a high tempo for so many months. So thank you for all the thousands of people that have reached out to Congress and helped tell the story. And we really appreciate your time.
All
this
right.
has been a very sustained effort on the part of associations. So yeah, it's been great to have the support.
Right. And you still need more and we still have to give more. So, you know, everyone, we have to be watching. We have to be involved. And I plan on getting more involved too. You heard it here first. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thanks so much.
All right. Oh, I cut off Chris too soon. Thank you everyone for watching today. I hope you learned a lot about what's happening in the association advocacy space and all of the great work that ASA is doing, advocating on behalf of our industry. I know I learned a lot, and I am hoping to be more involved as we move on in the future. But as always, I have to implore you that you should keep asking questions to learn every day. As Joseph Campbell once said, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. And I hope with that you have a great week, everyone.